This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay, we have two very interesting guests today and a provocative topic. The guests are Paul Johnson and Terry Goddard. Both are former mayors of Phoenix. Both resigned to run for governor. Both lost. Might be a lesson there. Among other
could have
things,
left that part out, Mike.
Terry fit a bad example.
I try to find.
We're both tall and good looking.
Yeah,
why don't
okay.
You, why don't
okay.
You start there?
Tall and good looking, and older than they once were. But I try to find a common thread, and it was
you failed.
Start striking one. Okay, I have a somewhat long introduction, but it's to make a point. There's something called a democracy index. It's compiled by the Economists Intelligence Unit. It's a British-based company that attempts to measure democracy in 167 countries. Their index is based on 60 indicators of things like pluralism, civil liberties, and political culture. Well, in the U.S., we like to think of ourselves as a model democracy, but this group has rated the U.S. in the second category. They call it a flawed democracy. We scored lower than 24 other countries, but edged out just barely Cape Verde, Portugal, and Botswana. Well, why would that be the case? I have a list of 10 or 11 things, and what I want to suggest is that the things on this list are not a coincidence. Almost all of them have the effect of lowering the voting participation of minorities and lower income people in general. Let me quickly as I can run through them for you. Number one, monkeying with the census. Deliberately an attempt to undercount Hispanics and thus deprive them of representation. By the way, that's the one that hits home with me as a professional pollster. The American Community Survey is a survey of 3.5 million people a year. It's done by the census. And all of these other things are excuses, like what's the proportion of people who are not a citizen or a citizen, are covered more than amply by that. We do a census for two reasons. One, it's required by the Constitution. Two, it is required in order to set apportionment for Congress. Okay. By the way, since citizenship question almost certainly will cost Arizona a seat in Congress. That's the local thing. Okay, I'll be quicker on the others. That's point one. Point two, purging voter rolls of infrequent voters and frequent movers. Guess what? They tend to be lower income
and
folks.
And students.
Yep. Number three, unreasonable ID requirements, which impacts lower class people more or less likely to have a driver's license and things like that. Number four, pre-registration requirements. To vote in this country, you have to go through two independent and discrete steps, and registration has to occur a certain amount of time before voting. Number five, elections are held on a workday, a Tuesday, with no guarantee of time off, versus an election day, either an election day holiday or Sunday voting, which both of which would increase participation. Number six, felon disenfranchisement. By the way, that was first put in the South to keep freed blacks from voting. And that that accompanied by mass arrest has had a dramatic effect. Number seven, unlimited corporate cash into campaigns. Number eight, keeping that cash secret. Number nine, contrived means of making citizen initiatives more difficult. Number 10, location of polling places. A particularly outrageous example of that in the last election, Kansas, Dodge City, an iconic old name, became a largely Hispanic enclave, and they removed the single voting site in Dodge City, and they moved it a good distance away and not on a boat, not on a bus route. Number 11 is gerrymandering, where elected officials select their voters rather than the other way around. Probably the one that has been best solved, if we are vigilant about it, in the state of Arizona. Now, of this list, I think only the last one has been a truly bipartisan flaw. In states run by Democrats like California, Republicans and Democrats have equal culpability for gerrymandering. But the rest of them, they're pretty uniformly look like they are addressed at lower income minority voters who tend to vote Democratic and may have are likely collect. Now, any one of these, this would be my main point is, folks, do you see a pattern here? Any one of these, you could come up with at least a super flaw, a superficially plausible argument against. But you look at the whole list here and say, is this contrived? I mean, it sounds to me like these collectively amount to an attempt to fix the results of elections. Your comments?
Well, there's no doubt in my mind there's an attempt to fix the result of elections. I would argue a little bit. I always hate arguing with somebody who's known as Doc. But nonetheless, I would argue just a little bit on whether or not it's one party. I do think that there is an attempt oftentimes by both parties to try to fix the turnout. And you partly see that through partisan elections. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole idea of parties really only wanting people within their party to vote, because the progressives in the Democratic Party know the more they exclude independents from voting, the better a chance they'll have it being successful. And Republicans know the same thing from a conservative standpoint. These other items that you mentioned, besides gerrymandering, obviously goes way beyond that. But gerrymandering itself is a massive issue in this country. Out of 435 seats, the argument is there's between 50 and 60 seats that are actually competitive. Yep. All the rest of them, the results are determined in the primary. And again, in those primaries, the parties are doing all they can to make certain that they get the result that they want.
And that means that in those non-competitive districts, what you want to be is the most extreme Republican or the most extreme Democrat.
That's exactly
right.
That's
how you win a primary.
If you want me to show you how to win a primary, I can show you one. But I can promise you, for most people, the positions that you will have to take are at least distasteful.
Well, you have to promise never to talk to the other side.
Exactly.
That's sort of the barrier to entry. If mm-hmm. you don't do that, you don't win a primary.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Joe Biden got in trouble for that the other day.
He did. He did.
He said, basically, I can work with some of the most I was able to work with some of the most despicable people in my own party, and he got called to task for it.
Because he's in a primary.
Yeah. Now, add to that money, and no one has done more on the issue of money and trying to get rid of dark money than my good friend Terry Goddard on the left, although he keeps sucking me into the effort.
I do.
But nonetheless, you know, you add money and dark money to that, then it begins to become more compounded. The idea that you then begin to affect poor people and minorities, you know, that is just uniquely un-American. I mean, in every possible way that you could imagine. The idea of trying to change that result, though, is going to be a big deal, especially in the political environment that we're in today. I was telling Terry before the meeting, one of my friends with the State Department made a comment that I thought was interesting, and I don't know if he was quoting someone else, but he said, if you look at the world and the reductions that are taking place in Western democracy and Western liberal thinking, meaning the focus on the individual as opposed to the collective, he said, we're definitely in decline. And he said, we've seen all over the world where there's a centralization of power that happens in the executive, where the courts begin to become more partisan, where the media begins to be demonized by the government, where people who are in office begin to make more money, and where free elections end up being under attack. He says the only thing is we just haven't seen that in the past in English, right? It's happening mm-hmm. right here.
Russia, Turkey, China, lots of places. Yeah, we have it in not a good way to put it, not in English.
Not
yeah.
in English, right? It hasn't really been happening in Western democracies. And the truth is, it is happening in Western democracies. There are a whole list of attacks that are going on the whole idea of Western democracy and how we work. Changing the way that the vote works, changing how people are able to participate, is going to have a long-term effect on how Western democracy and the ideals and the principles that we have brought to the fore in the past are going to survive.
You know, I agree with that, and I think, Mike, you could look at this this list that you just went through as not so much a partisan list, but as a maintenance of power list. I mean, this is a classic example of how the folks who have it try to keep it. And one of the ways you do that is you basically disenfranchise your opposition. And so that's why I think Paul made a good point that, it, you know, depending on the state, you know, you have different different approaches to how you draw an accurate congressional district or legislative district. But I think American people, just speaking across the country, are sick and tired of this litany of trying to maintain one group in power. And they've spoken out against it, started with drawing lines, gerrymandering, which I always thought was a very abstract and hard to sort of a political science issue.
All of these are second order things. They're not things that relate to who we're going to elect right now. It's not the choice
of the
election.
The
it's about the system that tends to produce certain kind of. We'll pick up on that when we come back with Terry Goddard and Paul Johnson in just a moment.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're back with Paul Johnson and Terry Goddard talking about the possible demise of democracy. Terry, you were in the middle of that.
I think it's that simple, and I think that's what people are getting around the country. I've been trying to monitor various citizens' movements, and by that I really mean the nonpartisan generated by grassroots organizations. And they started in Michigan, was one example in the last cycle, getting very excited about something that I started to mention just before the break, which was gerrymandering, the arbitrary and often very, very arbitrary dividing of legislative and congressional districts on to further one party or the other. And
essentially what a party tries to do is set it up so they can win a whole bunch of districts by just a little and shove all your opponents in one or two districts.
Absolutely. And that's something political scientists have argued about for years, but the general public hasn't. Well, in Michigan, it went like a wildfire. People basically said, stop gerrymandering. And they got the signatures almost immediately and got on the ballot and put up something like we already have in Arizona, which is a nonpartisan effort to draw those lines, and which I think is eminently preferable to the former situation in the legislature.
And I think we really have a model commission in that.
In many ways, we've got one of the best. Yeah, there was a period where Arizona actually led the country in democracy reform. Now, not so much anymore.
We've done pretty well when things actually get on the ballot and go to citizen votes.
Yes, they do. So there's a whole effort in Arizona to keep that from happening. And the legislature has truly been hyperactive in trying to make sure citizens' right to petition for new legislation is thwarted, choked in the cradle, if you will.
Yeah, they don't like it when citizens tell them what to do.
They really don't. But if you look at your list, it's unfortunately true. It's unfortunately, I think, on the ascendancy as opposed to the decline. And the only antidote that I can find is citizens actually taking the power back through the petition if one of the 20 states, as Arizona is, that has that right. But that truly is a grassroots movement across America, and I applaud it, but it has tremendous obstacles in its way, and most of them are the current incumbents.
And on the other hand, though, I think there's a thing that has changed that has made it easier. And the Save Our Schools people demonstrated that is the ability to harness social media to pull people together. I don't think they could have pulled that off without social media. Nobody thought they were going to do it because the mountain was too high.
They really didn't. And they did a great job of a referendum. But bear in mind, a referendum is 5% of the vote for governor in the previous election. That's how many signatures you have to get. An initiative is 10%. A constitutional amendment, such as we're trying to do with Outlaw Dirty Money, is 15%. So that becomes a much, much larger number. Now, I'm not arguing about the number. That's in our Constitution. What I would argue about is the way the legislature has systematically set about making it far more difficult to do a legislative initiative than, for example, to get a candidate on the ballot.
For example, you can get a candidate on the ballot with online signatures.
Right. But no, you can't do legislation that way. I think
they argue for some peculiar reason that encourages fraud in the case of initiatives, but not in the case of their own signatures.
Hypocrisy by any other name is still hypocrisy. and trying to make sure that you can stay in office with as little effort as possible, as opposed to having somebody else who you may not approve of actually propose legislation, is the challenge that we have right now. And it's got to, in my view, to protection of our democracy, we have to go back to make sure that those essential rights, citizen rights, are protected and preserved, not systematically undercut. And one of them, I believe, is what we're trying to do right here, which is to make sure that through an initiative, the original source of all funds that are spent on politics gets disclosed. So at least we know who it is we're fighting against. We may not have more money than they do, but at least we identify whether it's APS or the Koch brothers or the Soroses. We know that it's a major force and we know what their objectives are.
How many signatures you have on this last time?
285,000 is how many we filed last time.
And you needed?
We needed 225.
And they find a way to throw
out. They found a way to throw out just enough. I'd be happy to go into that, but I don't think you have enough time in the show as to how they did it.
Point being, this is personal. The point is that you know, not only do you have those thresholds of 5, 10, or 15%, but then those signatures are subject to scrutiny in ways that are not necessarily all addressed at just making sure they're legitimate.
Absolutely. There are all kinds of technical barriers that they try to throw up to make sure that signatures don't count.
Okay, we will be back in just a moment with Terry Goddard and Paul Johnson discussing the state of our democracy, big questions in the think tank when we return after the news break.
Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're talking with Terry Goddard and Paul Johnson on the subject of the potential demise of American democracy. Paul, at the beginning, I went through a long list of mechanisms that have been in wide use. The common thread is really an attempt to suppress democracy, suppress vote. In your observation, has it gotten worse over the last 10 or 20 years?
I think it's gotten a lot worse over the last couple of years. But there's no doubt there's a decline. I mean, not just in the United States, but around the world. To me, I think you have to start by trying to get people to focus on, so what? Why does this matter? Why does it matter if we're alienating minorities? Why does it matter if we're alienating independents? Why does it matter if we're allowing unlimited amounts of money into the system? My own personal opinion is that as Americans, we tend to think that freedom is a universal value, that everybody agrees that that's how it should work. But the truth is, if you look at things like authoritarianism or power or religion, those are much more universal values than is freedom. I mean, freedom came about or came back in 1776, and it existed no place in the world until then. And it prospered and it grew and it started to spread throughout the world.
Age of Enlightenment.
Age of Enlightenment. And it's when in World War I and World War II, when the United States really began to gain a lot of economic power for a variety of reasons, we saw through Bretton Woods, the Marshall Plan, we saw through the world's reserve currency that we were able to spread our ideas throughout the world. Well, the three freedoms that are important from an American standpoint are electoral freedoms, individual freedoms, and corporate freedoms. We tend to think that those things aren't tied together. I believe they are. I believe they're uniquely tied together. If you begin to lose this battle, that's really what you're putting at risk. You're putting at risk those concepts, because what begins to happen is as people begin to lose faith in the electoral system, which we saw a foreign government trying to do in this country, as they lose faith in it, they begin to look for something else. And the rest of the world begins to lose faith in it, and they begin to look for something else. And so our allies maybe begin to ally with other groups. Preserving those, not just in the United States, but around the world, is tied to these issues of making certain that people not only have the right to vote, but that we do everything that we can to encourage as many of them as possible to vote. And unfortunately, that's not the direction we're going. We are going in the exact opposite directions. The effort legislatively to begin to limit people's right to vote through a variety of different sources is being done legislatively throughout the country.
And often with a plausible excuse.
Mm-hmm. Well, the excuse is always evidence of corruption, evidence of misuse of the project.
And without, in terms of voter fraud,
such evidence.
You know, I saw one national study surveyed this on a national basis, and they found a couple of dozen cases. And it was somebody in almost every case. It was like somebody moved from Minnesota to Arizona, had cast an absentee vote in Minnesota, and then they voted here. And they were slightly more Republican than Democrat, and they were just accidents. They were things that shouldn't have happened. You don't steal an election by one person inadvertently voting a second time. You steal an election with tens or hundreds or thousands. Well, if you can purge the votes, the voting rolls of hundreds of thousands of people, and those people tend to have certain characteristics, poorer, more minority, whatever, then you change the result, not by one per person who forgot and voted a second time.
Well, and then it becomes hypothetical. Well, we don't want it to ever happen. Bob Robb got it right in the part that you said.
I was going to quote
election
that.
Should be they should be
easy to vote,
easy
to
hard,
vote
to hard to cheat. And I think that is that's the right mission, but that's not – Paul's exactly right. That's not the one that has been taken through this series of deprivations of voter rights to make it harder and harder and harder to use the franchise.
Mm-hmm. It's really difficult to say there is no election fraud. Right. So what we had to start doing is saying, there was that one guy. Right.
I think of that case. I'm not really thinking if it's inadvertent, it's not really fraud. It's something that shouldn't happen. But folks, there's other cases where hundreds of thousands of people are finding it almost impossible to vote.
Do you want to make it for someone to vote? How many people do you want to disenfranchise from voting to get that one guy? Right. And at some point in time, that's exactly.
Are you willing
what
to throw
doing.
Out 100,000 other votes to
and recognize where we are technologically? The idea that we don't have same day registration is absurd because now you can check the various files. Mm. You know exactly what somebody's identity is if they come in on voting day and say, I want to vote. I'm entitled to vote and I want to register right now in Arizona. There's really no reason technologically why that isn't perfectly feasible, and it would be, you could not defraud the system.
And that's a game changer. That undercuts so many different half of these things that are on this list of impediments. If you had same day, it's not same day. It's walk into the voting place,
sure,
register,
but there's
and
no
vote.
Fraud reason for not doing
right.
that. There are lots of other reasons that they throw
they are
up
political
at you,
and
but
contrivances.
They're
yes,
and you mentioned Tuesday voting. I mean, that's a throwback to when agriculture was king, and
it didn't matter.
It did not matter. But certainly, other countries have used weekend or 24-hour voting cycles to encourage people to do it. And some countries, very uniquely, and I think this would never go down here, but they have compulsory voting in Australia.
And by the way, I've talked to Australia. Now that sounds un-American to us. I've talked
to
Australians.
Indeed.
I've talked to Australians. They love it. And they have, I think, a very sensible view of it. You know, there are certain – when you are in a civic democracy, you take on certain obligations. For example, we mandatory – you must pay your taxes. You must pay your fair share. And voting, they have come to see, is on a par with that. It's a civic – if you're going to live in a democracy, you have an obligation to participate.
Well, let's not go there yet.
You're not going to sell that one, but I'm telling you what I've heard from
us. We could do a lot better in terms of same-day registration, making sure that everybody who has a driver's license gets a ballot. I mean, there are ways to –
getting rid of dark money out of campaigns.
And absolutely. I think that the dark money undermines the entire process because nobody knows that they've cast a knowledgeable vote. If you don't know who's behind an ad – and you vote either for or against a opposition or a candidate because of that ad, but you have no idea who sponsored it, I don't think you can claim that you knew what you were doing.
And the
voted.
APS case is the poster child.
We are
that.
The poster child for dark money in Arizona.
But APS, when you basically have commissioners that are being elected.
I'll tell you the poster child, Russia. Yeah. You know, how do you – we're blaming Facebook, we're blaming Google, but you might want to ask this question. Hey, if you can funnel your money through dark money campaigns, how are they supposed to know? Right. How are they supposed to know who was behind this? Obviously, foreign governments. How difficult is it for China to get involved in our electoral system?
Not at all.
It's not difficult at all. If they want to do
They set up a PAC called Citizens for Good Government. They funnel in Chinese money, which we can never find out because of dark money. And
all Russia did was create a roadmap. They created a roadmap for the rest of the world to say, here's how you do it. Here's how you get this done. If we don't find a way to start improving or increasing the amount of people who can vote, and at the exact same time making certain that it's not being unduly influenced by sources that shouldn't have the right to be in the game, our Western democracy is in trouble. The icon, the light for the rest of the world that says this is the way, it's no longer going to be the way.
And I think the one thing that's the red herring in this argument is we are not in this kind of electoral tampering. We're not talking about, though it would be scary if it happens, we're not talking about, there's no evidence that Russia in the last election went in and changed the actual ballots that were cast. However, short of that,
not for want of trying, by the way.
Well, and a good reason to keep paper ballots forever. We've got a decent system in that regard. But I think, yeah, the idea of electronic screens, those are now dead. We're not going to see those because you want a paper ballot so you can recount it. But if they can go in and with unlimited resources completely change the nature of political discourse through phony media and tens of millions of phony accounts creating false impressions of what people are saying, you've completely changed.
You know, Mike, what I've learned in being in office, I was a registered Democrat in many ways. There are many Democratic values that I still hold dear, civil rights, equal rights, human rights, but I'm a registered independent. Here's one thing that I found in office. Ideologies, at the end of the day, see the public being in the way of getting what they want. They're in the way, right? They believe that if you could just implement the ideology, the orthodoxy, and make it work the way that they believe that the world should work, that it'd be a better world. And at the end of the day, it's almost like a dystopian novel.
No, right? my problem with ideology is it makes you impervious to data. Mm-hmm. And facts, because you've got this worldview and you fit the facts that you allowed in to the pre-existing philosophy. Mm-hmm. And that's always that's like using half your brain.
And I am absolutely happy to have them be a part of the debate and to be able to listen to them and to be able to weigh on different issues, which ones I may agree with. But at the end of the day, the only salvation to them, the only way we save ourselves from them is making certain more people can vote.
We will be back with concluding segment with Paul Johnson and Terry Goddard when we return in the Think Tank in just a moment.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we're back with Terry Goddard and Paul Johnson discussing the potential demise and threats to democracy in our society. Solutions, Terry, how do you fix it?
The shining beacon for democracy and freedom now has fallen to a much lower place in the world order, partly from people that we trained, Eastern Europe, Western Europe, and other areas that have found it, have liked it, have found it successful, and that formula is working probably better in there. The example of freedom is working there. The bad news is America's falling behind, and you pointed that out incredibly well with your 11
number
examples.
Number 24, and these
number
are
number 24, and America. Right behind Botswana. I mean, that's not a
we edged out Botswana by probably not a statistically significant difference.
That's not a wrong neighborhood. That is not a mark of pride in my book. But I think the good news is we can do a lot better. I see across the country people are taking the law into their own hands. Literally, it's almost a vigilante movement saying we'll use petitions, we'll use the rights that we've been given as citizens to take back our government. And that's what we're trying to do here in Arizona with the Outlaw Dirty Money program. Basically, the first step is to do something about the money that's washing through our system, the electric company that tries to set its own rates. We can fix that. And so I think the challenge is to do the hard work to get on the ballot and get it passed. That's the hopeful sign.
Let me pose this to you, Paul. The difficulty of this is what I'd call a second order issue. I mean, a first order issue would be, I'm concerned about immigration, I'm concerned about health care, where people can see the direct relationship of something to their lives. This is second order because it's how does the system work? And that doesn't that has an indirect influence. So APS gives dark money to people who are going to look favorably on rate increases. That doesn't get there's a step in between before your utility bill goes up. So you got to connect the dots. All of these things, you have to connect the dots before you care about them.
Well, I would just think about, you know, electoral freedoms and corporate freedoms are best protected by the court system. The idea of budgets, budgetary constraints, making certain that groups can balance budgets. Representative democracy does a pretty good job in that, our legislatures and our Congress. When you get down to dealing with electoral freedoms, the only group that's going to be able to – that's going to be the big promoter of it is going to be the public. The legislature doesn't like it. They're not looking
– because it constrains their power.
That's right. They're looking to become more powerful, not less.
They will say, you have elected me, and therefore I am all powerful and I should have the only say about what happens.
So
ignoring the fact that they may have that their election may be in part a result of having monkeyed with the rules.
And I think, Mike, part of this is getting, you know, I mean you were a pollster and we were just talking earlier about trying to get candidates to talk more about how does this affect me? How does this matter to me? I do think that the public cares about their rights being affected, their right to vote, their right to participate, other people's right to participate, and their right to be able to have an impact. Talking to them and trying to understand what drives that, I think, is going to be important. Talking to them in the language that they can understand. But at the end of the day, if we don't have it, you can bet that you're going to see a lot of less popular things being implemented because, like it or not, special interests have a much better ability to have control inside our legislature than they do inside the electoral box.
That's why our tax code is so long. Because if people knew what was in there, we'd have another American Revolution.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you're right, it's a secondary impact. But I think the getting good candidates elected depends upon having a level playing field. It depends upon having a fair system. It depends upon having citizens throughout the country and throughout the state exercise their franchise. That's not happening today. And so very often you'll see what appears to be an election that might go one way, suddenly going the other because somebody put their finger on the scale. And I think our job as citizens is to try to make sure that we reestablish those fundamental abilities and with blinders on. Frankly, I'm in our Outlaw Dirty Money program. We're not trying to limit the amount of money. We can't do that under Citizens United. But we are trying to say we have a basic right to know where it comes from. We have a right to know what it is, who it is, be it corporate or individual, is trying to dominate our elections using phony – right now they're using phony intermediaries to hide the ball. I think if we can make – if we can be diligent about making sure that the system is as blindfolded and as impartial and as transparent as possible, the results will be what we want.
Now, in the break, we have some of our most interesting conversation always. You were telling us your observations of actually how Russia meddled with our last election.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the fact that they went in and spread, for instance, the lie that Hillary was critically ill, obviously, and that was one of the three major force, you know, a certain person would have probably called that false news. Except that it helped him, and therefore it wasn't false news. I guess that's
what we need. And I think the point you made about that was everybody didn't have to believe it. This election was won with 70,000 votes in three upper Midwestern states. You only had to move a handful of voters.
But we knew that that particular troll message was seen by 30 million people. So you're right. All you had to move was 70,000.
If 2% believed it, that changed the result of the election.
And here's a problem that's a challenge for our democracy. We do definitely have to have some way of verifying the truth. And maybe that's a job for the universities. Somebody has to stand up there and say, this is based on scientific method, based on whatever impartial basis you want. I think just about everybody else wants to know, okay, what are the standards? And how do we know if something is totally made up?
A lot of that is corrected, Terry, with what we've been talking about with the dark money issue. If you just knew who it came from, if you could identify the original source –
then you can evaluate the way a voter evaluates a witness at trial. Mm-hmm. But voters – excuse me, a juror. But a voter today doesn't get any of those rights, and they should. They should. That's the way the system ought to work.
And there's always a shell intermediary with a very positive name.
Yeah, it's, I mean, if you really want to run in an American election today, give me a call and I'll show you how to set up a shell corporation and how to call it, you know, Americans for Peace and Prosperity or Americans for a Better Neighborhood. And then go ahead and take your foreign government interest or your utility interest and spend a couple million bucks through that trying to influence the election. You can find a high degree of success because nobody knows who you are. And at the end of the day, if we allow that to happen, there will be consultants, there will be people who will drive people into those systems. The amount of money that candidates raise today versus these dark money organizations, it's being dwarfed. The money is no longer going to the candidates. They're going to these places where one group can give a lot of money to go influence the election. And then the candidate doesn't have to take responsibility for the irresponsible things that it may be saying about the other candidate.
The third-party group can do really dirty stuff, mm-hmm. whereas if the candidate said that himself, that would reflect poorly on the candidate.
Mm-hmm. And plus, their campaigns are scrutinized as to where they got their money.
So here's a reform. Let's just make sure that the candidates have responsibility for everything that's said on their behalf or against their opponent.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes they get asked to disavow stuff. You know, would you disavow that? And then often they'll do it sort of, yeah.
After the fact.
No. Or do it minimally.
It's only when somebody puts a light on them. And unfortunately, we talked about that on the break also. What's happening within the news media is that the news media they've been traumatized in terms of losses. When Terry and I were in office at City Hall, we had two reporters from the Republic, two from the Gazette, one or two from the New Times. We had somebody from KTAR there. We had a newsroom that people were filled in. That no longer exists today. Add that up with dark money being able to influence these campaigns, no reporters at City Hall, no spotlight being shined on them. It is inevitable that you will begin to find corruption, and that will further erode the free election system.
And that's the way I'm talking implicit, yeah, but the role of good journalism, investigative journalism, and shedding a light on what's happening.
That's missing, but what we need to do is reestablish voters' confidence in the system, and that's seriously depleted today.
Thank you very much, Terry Goddard and Paul Johnson, discussing democracy in America. We'll see you next week in the Think Tank.